You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
If this is your year, and a lot of signs for the Royals point in that direction, these are the games that you win. If it is not your year, these are the games you do not win. Alex down in the count, 0-1. Perkins brings it home. A fly ball, well hit to right. Back goes Arcia to the wall. He leaps and gone. Gordon.
Welcome into the Pine Tar Podcast. I am David Leskey, and I am alongside virtual Clint Scholes. We are bringing you Royals coverage once again for another week on the Pine Tar Podcast. Glad to have you in with us. Going to be a good episode. We'll try to keep it a little shorter than usual for you because we know you guys have busy lives. Coming up here in a little bit, Clint sat down with Royals former Royals pitcher, Royals Hall of Famer, and current Royals broadcaster Jeff Montgomery. So that we'll have that for you here in a little bit. But first, let's say hello to Clint. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. Watching this team trying to push some runs across here.
Yeah, making Ricky Nolasco look good, and it's hard to do. obviously, this is Tuesday evening, August 26th. As we record, it's scoreless in the after the sixth inning. So, when you're listening to this, you can remember where you were when that happened. It'll be a momentous occasion in your life. Kind of the big story around the Royals, and it's interesting because now we're on 2+ weeks in first place, and so it's kind of become ho-hum, and I hope they don't lose it because I don't know if people can handle dropping into second place based on the reaction from a couple losses. So the big story outside the ho-hum first place is Eric Hosmer got a clean bill of health, and he's going to start swinging a bat and probably will hit a rehab assignment down in one of the affiliates, probably in the playoffs. And then it looks like he'll be back. And we talked about this a little bit last week between you and me, Clint, and with Nate Bucati of 810 WHB. And at the time, you know, we kind of thought, well, the Royals just they can't put him back in the lineup. Butler's defense has been fine. His offense has been excellent since playing first base since Hosmer went down. And Josh Willingham's been too good to take out of the lineup. I think when Hosmer first went down and we saw Butler start to hit well and then they acquired Willingham, I think our thought was originally it doesn't matter. Hosmer's going back to first base. And then things kind of changed and the timeline for Hosmer shifted a little bit. The thought was maybe he won't be back until too late to go on a rehab assignment, all that. And now it looks like he is going to go on a rehab assignment. And that changes things a little bit. And my guess is the Royals go back to what they had most of the season. They're going to go back to their defensive lineup, which is Hosmer at first base. And he is better than Butler. And yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting. And Boy, this offense at times, as we've seen in the last few days, can really, really struggle. I don't like the idea of taking out one of the three biggest bats in the lineup with Butler, Gordon, and Willingham. What are your thoughts on this, Clint?
I don't like it either. Now, you're not destined to take them all out. You can play Willingham in right field, but you significantly decrease your defensive game, and the team is built around defense if you do that and put Butler at DH and play Hosmer at first, and you gain some defense at first base, but you lose quite a bit in right field by doing that. And the other problem that the Royals might be running into is this is the last week of minor league baseball as far as schedules go, and the Storm Chasers have gotten ran down by Oklahoma City. They're red hot. They're tied in the standings. I wouldn't be shocked if Oklahoma City passes them tonight. As a matter of fact, if Omaha loses. And Wilmington's been passed. And so the Royals might not have a minor league affiliate in the playoffs to actually get him down playing somewhere. And I don't understand why he's not playing or on a bus right now. It doesn't make any sense to me.
If he's cleared, why isn't he playing?
Yeah, if he can swing a bat, then why isn't he swinging a bat? You're just not going to get it in live hitting situations, or you're not going to replicate what you can in a game. And even if it is a triple A game or a high A game, it's a game action. Swinging against Bruce Chan in the tunnels is just not the same, and it just baffles me. I don't understand. Get him out there, get him playing, let's go. This team, he's got to come up, and he can't miss a beat. They can't drag his offense along, because the rest of the team's dragging along. Sal Perez isn't hitting. Other guys in the lineup aren't hitting. They can't afford to drag a first baseman along with them, and that's just the facts. I mean, this team needs some offense. They're struggling the last couple games. They're back to the same old Royals offense, and you know, you got Dyson getting picked off first base a couple nights in a row. You got Sal Perez is in a dead slump. It's been just terrible since the All-Star break. And really, the only one supplying some offense right now has been Gordon Butler, a little bit from Willingham, and Christian Colon on the nights he actually gets to play. And the biggest problem I have, too, with the idea of Hosmer coming back is that you know Yost is going to put him in the upper third of the lineup.
Mm-hmm. That too, yeah.
So you can't just, I mean, that's the biggest problem this team has, is lineup construction is poor on Yost's part. Playing certain players is poor. This offense just can't help it. You know, a couple weeks ago when it was red hot, you could put anybody anywhere. But now he's not playing Aoki, and we're watching Dyson get picked off. Yeah, Aoki went in a slump, but he was one of the key figures in this turnaround, and now all of a sudden he can't buy a plate appearance. And you're seeing guys like Raul Ibanez take up spots in the lineup. If Aoki's hurt, let's say he's hurt. I mean, I just don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, if he is hurt, then bring up. I mean, the guy hasn't been hitting home runs the last week or last few days after on quite the pace he was, but or at all. But if Aoki's hurt, put him on the DL and bring up Peguero.
Oh, you know, I agree.
Get some potential instant offense in the lineup. And, you know, we joked about Peguero when the Royals picked him up in the offseason. They talked, oh, he could be the next Jose Bautista. Well, no, that's not the case. And the Royals are just about to give up a lead here. Yep. Or they're down 1-0 in the top of the seventh, which the way the offense is playing, it feels like a ball game moment, but we'll see. I can't fathom this offense staying that as hot as they were, and the organization isn't doing enough to help them stay hot either. You know, playing Ibanez 2 days in a row, that's just stupid. I mean, I don't criticize Ned Yost as much as a lot of other people, because managers are managers, but playing Raul Ibanez over Josh Willingham, you deserve to have your baseball IQ questioned. 2 days in a row? Really? It is very clear who the better offensive player is, and it's very clear that one of those guys is pretty much washed up. So you're actively hurting the offense by putting that out there, and it's frustrating. And you know, these are the ebbs and flows of a long season, and they weren't going to play 800 baseball over the final whatever how many games they had, but what they're showing right now is just not enough.
No, I mean,
it worries me.
I'll give him a pass on Monday's game, but Sunday's game against Scott Baker, the guy's done. I've watched him in AAA. I've watched him at Omaha. That guy's done. He's got nothing left in the tank.
Yeah.
And he just rolled through this offense just like he was back in the, you know, the early 2000s rolling through this offense. It was embarrassing. And a little bit of what I think of it was, you got a hot heat day. You've already got the series clinched and you're heading home on Sunday. So it was kind of a phone-in game. But mm-hmm. You can't afford to do that this time of year.
No, they had a nice... They had a three-game division lead heading into the game on Sunday. And it's a nice little lead, but it's not enough that you can throw away a game. It's not enough that you can go out there. And I don't, it's funny. People only question effort in a loss. I didn't see a whole lot of difference in the effort on Sunday. What I saw was a little bit less patience, and that's hard to do with this team because they already have very little patience. I saw... maybe I guess this goes along with the patience. I saw a more antsy approach, and it looked like they were saying, "All right, we're cool with 6-3," and that's not acceptable. They needed to get out there and hit a bad pitcher, and they couldn't do it. And it can be maddening. This team, it's the roller coaster. It's the royal coaster, and that's what they put us through all season long. And to expect anything different is crazy. This is a good team. Don't get me wrong, but I mean they were due for a valley. They've had a long peak, and now they're due for a little bit of a valley. And hopefully they can withstand the heat of the Tigers during this valley.
Well, they just jumped on Josh Vernier the day before about asking a question about the team's focus, and Gerard Dyson, the team's mouthpiece, for whatever reason, I don't understand why Gerard is the team's mouthpiece.
Because he likes to talk.
I guess so, but he's the one who likes to kind of get in the media's face, and he jumped on Vernier saying it was a stupid question, that this team hasn't been in the playoffs in 25 years, and of course they're focused. Well, then the next day you totally laid an egg and showed that you weren't. So don't jump on the media's back and then totally go out there and lay a total egg. It's kind of funny. This team, they show their youth quite often, and they've played great baseball, and we've given them credit along the way. But every night in, night out, this is important. You only got a 1.5 game lead now. Detroit's playing good ball. They're about ready to win their third game in a row. They're going to take down the Yankees, who the Royals just got blitzed by last night. They've got three solid pitchers. The Royals, they just can't force to let up, and the offense has to do more than what they're doing right now.
Well, I'll tell you this right now. As we're talking at this very moment, the Royals are down 1-0 to the Twins in the top of the seventh. Could get worse before I even finish this sentence. I still think the Royals win the division. The Tigers got some news today that Anibal Sanchez is probably done for the regular season. Well, they didn't get the news. That's what he said. He wasn't sure he could pitch again. Or maybe Osmus said it. One of the two. And that leaves their rotation a little bit iffy. Price, Scherzer, and Porcello are excellent. They're fantastic top three. But over the course, and I mentioned this on Twitter, over the course of basically a month of baseball, and that's pretty much what it comes down to. That's what we've got left. What is the difference between Price, Scherzer, and Porcello versus Shields, Duffy, and we'll say Vargas now because Ventura's out with some back stiffness? What is the difference in that short amount of time? I can't imagine it's much, because you talk and you say, yes, I think all three of those pitchers, well, Scherzer and Price are certainly better than anybody the Royals have. Porcello might be. At that point, though, for 30 games, how much better are they really? A game, maybe?
Well, that, and then the Royals pick up that game on the back half with their back two starters are better than Detroit's back two.
Right, and that's what I was going to get to in a second, because...
With the level of what Verlander's pitching, I think, I don't remember if you put Ventura in that three, but Ventura Guthrie is better than Verlander Buck Farmer.
I mean, Robbie Ray.
Ray. Yeah. And that's Robbie Ray and Buck Farmer, one of them's not going to start from now on probably, but for how long? Verlander he didn't look exactly light it up in that Minnesota start.
No, and that's the thing. Verlander, you never know when that shoulder is going to bark again. I could see a scenario where the Tigers' bullpen is such a bad bullpen. If Verlander's shoulder barks, I could potentially see the Royals or the Tigers putting him back in the bullpen now and trying to capture some magic, because he's obviously not cutting it as a starter, and I think that that seems unlikely considering the options, because it's Buck Farmer or Robbie Ray pretty much. But I don't know. That Doug Fister trade, not to go back to ancient history, but that's looking worse every day for the Tigers. Because if they had Doug Fister right now, well, I don't think they'd be down in the division. I think they'd be leading the division over the Royals. But on top of that, they even if they weren't, I feel like I'd give them the edge because Pfister is potentially even better than anybody the Royals have. But yeah, so in spite of the downturn, in spite of what they've done the last three games, and who knows, maybe while we're talking, the Royals put a seven spot on the board in the bottom of the seventh inning, and we seem silly for talking about this, but I still think they win the division. I don't think they're the best team in the division, but I think they win it.
Yeah, I just like how the schedule lines up for them. I like how you go past that. Miguel Cabrera's not 100%. He's limping around tonight.
Yeah.
That team's not what they were. They're definitely not the team that battered the Royals around. I think it goes back to what we were saying with Nate last week, is that I think the front office anticipated Detroit with their age coming back to them in June. And it took an extra month, but they've came back to them and they're coming and they're showing their age at this point. And yeah, the Royals on paper have more age than the Tigers, but top to bottom, got man-to-man, the important players, the Royals are significantly younger, and they look like it.
Yeah, it's a tough stretch right now. It's hard to swallow three straight bad offensive games, but it's a long season. I know we keep saying that. It's hard to look at what this team's done over the course of the first 130, and by the time you guys are listening to this, it'll be 131 games, and say, oh, this is a bad team. It's not a bad team. It's a good team. Not a great team. They've probably gotten a little lucky, but you look at the rest of the schedule, I think they're going to do fine. The way I see it, I've said this before, they probably need 91 wins to win the division. That could be high, I think. I think they might not need that many, especially if they take care of the Tigers in their six games remaining against them. But if they can get to 91 wins, I don't really see a scenario where they lose the division unless the Tigers just go crazy. And I don't see that happening based on their injuries and all that. So yeah, this is one of those valleys in a season that we have to get through. And I think, tell me if you think I'm crazy here, but I think what we're seeing now on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Facebook's always crazy, but I think what we're seeing, and Herrera just blew some gas by Trevor Plouffe, by the way. I think what we're seeing is a Royals fan base that has no idea what a playoff race is like. Just absolutely no clue. And there's no reason why they should, because it's been 29 freaking years. So it's just interesting to see out there that the reactions to a loss to the Rangers and things like that. The Royals are going to lose another game this year. They're probably going to lose more than one. That's my guess. I mean, I'm no expert, but I think they're going to lose another game or two. They're also going to win a few more games, so yeah, it'll be fine.
No, I think you're right. I think the culmination of that was last night with the Yankees game. I mean, that you got a team that just the city's grown up hating. You got a guy in Derek Jeter who, as much as everybody likes to say, he's a class act and everything, but most common everyday people, a lot of them, they say they have respect for him, but at the back of their mind, they probably loathe him and his life quite a bit. I mean, they're jealous. And 31,000 people showed up, and the Royals laid a total egg, and they're gonna lay a couple more eggs this season, and people just need to get used to it. I mean, that's just how it is.
Well, here's what I always think about, and I always tell people. The best team of the last almost 100 years lost 46 times. I mean, think about that. Even the very, very best team that we've seen, record-wise, that we've seen since the schedule went to 162 games, since 1969, 62, whenever that was. Anyway. The very best team lost 46 times. Now, I don't think anybody is asking the Royals to be the best team in the history of baseball. To win this division, like I said, 91 wins probably gets it done. That's 71 losses. It's hard. Sometimes it's hard to remember that. Sometimes it's hard to keep in mind that the very best teams lose games. And sometimes they lose games to bad teams.
No, it's just the football mentality of the world is what it is. It's you watch 16 games in football and you freak out about four of them, and your team wins 12, and those are the 12 greatest, and that's all it is. It's small sample size, and baseball is not a small sample sport. I mean,
no, and when you even looking at a week is too little. You know, the Royals went 24-6. That's a sample you can look at. They're 24-28 start. That's a sample you can look at. And I think it just shows how bipolar this team is, those two samples that I named. But, you know, it's there's going to be wins. There's going to be losses. I promise they're even going to lose multiple games in a row. This is the first time in August they've lost more than one in a row.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
Oh, it was nuts. And you knew it was going to happen, and people freaked out. I think it's a lot of it's just a lot of non-trust with this team. And
they've earned that, to be fair.
And the letdown and just the lack of offense. I mean, that's a big one. This team, these fans are used to this team lacking offense. So there's some fear there that, hey, you know, they can lose. This offense can go away just as quickly as it came back, because we've seen that already once this season.
Well, yeah, absolutely. They absolutely can go away as quickly as they came back. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, so it's just relax, folks. Take a couple deep breaths and try to enjoy the ride.
Yeah, it's been a fun first 5 months, and my advice, if anybody asked for, if anybody wants some unsolicited advice, I think the best thing I can tell you is buckle up. I mean, I'm 29 years old. I'm about 25 years younger than you, Clint, and or like 8 years younger than you, whatever. If you do the math and you listen to me talk about this, I was less than 1 year old when the Royals won the World Series. Since then, they haven't really been participants in a pennant race. 2003, maybe, I guess. But I'm not speaking from experience here, but I'm speaking from common sense. This good teams lose games to bad teams. Good teams have their offense shut down. I look at this. I think it was last year, 2 years ago. We've talked about this. The A's had an 11-20 stretch where they hit worse than the Royals have at any point this year. That was a team with the best offense in baseball. That ended with the best record in baseball. Crap happens.
I agree.
That was my little advice column for the night.
Yep. But let's bring in Jeff Montgomery and hear what he has to say. Welcome in Royals Hall of Famer Jeff Montgomery. Jeff, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good. Looking for an opportunity for the maybe the Royals get back on track on the winning side of the ledger.
Yeah, that would definitely be nice. Jeff, I know you never made the playoffs as a member of the Royals, but how does this team compare to some of your teams that you were on in the late 80s and early 90s?
Well, it's a team that's very competitive. You know, the last part of the 80s and up until the strike of 94, I think almost every year the Royals, you know, we had a team that was competitive and, you know, in the race up till the end. The difference was up until 94, there really wasn't an opportunity for a wild card. So you had to compete for either the Eastern or the Western Division title, and there are going to only be two teams from each league that are going to make the postseason. So the, you know, the chances were very slim, and you had to have a really good team. I think we had a team or two in there that won over 90 games that didn't have any opportunity to play in a postseason. So good ball clubs, just less opportunities. And I think that's a little bit you know, similar to this team as far as good ball club, but now certainly more opportunities. And with the wild card and the multiple wild cards in each league, it's going to create a lot more excitement, a lot more opportunities for teams. And certainly the Royals would take it any way they can get it, you know, having such a long period of playoff drought, being 29 years now. But I think when you look at it, to try to really simplify your chances, you want to just focus on winning your division. And I go back to probably early May when the Detroit Tigers came to town. They just kind of buzzed through the Royals and won three straight games. And it was pretty evident that at that point the Royals and the Tigers were, you know, they were on different ends of the spectrum as far as their abilities. The Tigers had won the first couple of games of the season in Detroit, and they came to Kansas City in that early May series, and they were then 5-0 against the Royals, and I didn't think there was any chance the Royals would even be talking about winning division, you know, here as we wrap up the month of August going into September. But sure enough, the Royals have been resilient. They've been able to find ways to get things done, maybe not sometimes traditional for having that real megastar, that superstar MVP type guy on their team, but they've got a mixture of a lot of quality players, and I think now with the addition of the experience they've added through Raul Ibanez and Josh Willingham, it's going to give them some stability, you know, going through that last, you know, 5+ weeks of baseball.
You mentioned that rough start, and it's hard to believe that this team, the rough start with the division opponents, they, I think they were like 5-16 or 6-16, something, just a terrible start. And here they stand right now with, along with Detroit, with the best record in the division as far as inner opponents in that division. What was it like for your team in 89, 94, knowing that you were competing with the A's and then in 94 with the Indians and White Sox, to have teams that maybe talent-wise similar to the Royals teams that you just don't have the bats in, to compare to those teams?
Yeah, and I think if you look at really kind of playoff baseball particularly, pitching is going to win, you know, a lot of series. And most times you're going to get to postseason baseball by having good pitching, good defense. You can't win without them. But if you have a really superior player or performer from that, particularly the rotation, they have the ability to kind of catapult you through the postseason. I think that's one thing that, you know, when you look at, you know, the teams that the Royals are really competing against, they, you know, they have, you know, various ways of winning, but I think the Royals are more of a steady team, a team that's going to be probably more likely to work themselves into things by just playing good baseball, you know, basically 7 days a week going out there and doing kind of the same thing, whereas, you know, the Tigers, for example, they have the ability to, at times, kind of light up that scoreboard and, you know, put crooked numbers up and multiple innings during the course of a game, and they can get by with maybe some substandard starting pitching, and they had a great rotation at one point during the season. The injuries and lack of performance have really, you know, torn down their, you know, their starting rotation as far as the Tigers are concerned, but they still have the ability to put up runs to cover up some of those shortcomings as far as their rotation. So I think they'll do it in different ways, but I think that's looking back at the teams that, you know, we played on. We were really built around pitching, and that was always the real strength of our club was pitching, and we seem to always have good, you know, bullpen depth, and that's another thing this Royals team has is the ability to shorten ball games, get these games into, you know, 6- and 7-inning scenarios where if they can find a way to scratch out some runs early in the game, starting pitching normally does a pretty good job. They're not going to give away many at-bats. They're not going to give away many outs with regards to their lack of defense, so they can shorten these ball games, and that's one of the things that, you know, winning teams have the ability to do, and that's, you know, kind of play to their strength. And the Royals, certainly with a good bullpen, maybe the best bullpen in baseball going today as far as the depth and the real quality they have coming in that 7th, 8th, and 9th inning. So I've always felt like, you know, good bullpens have the ability, you know, to help you get there. They're not going to guarantee that you're going to win a pennant just by having a good bullpen. But if you don't have a good bullpen, it's almost a guarantee that you can't win a pennant. And I think that's, if I were going to look at one factor for the Royals, that stability and that depth and that consistency in their bullpen, that may be the real wild card that they have above some of the other teams, especially Detroit in their division.
You talk about having that shutdown bullpen with Holland, Davis, Herrera, obviously. What was it like for you from 89 to about 93? You were pretty dominant yourself. What was that like night in and night out to go out, take the ball, and have that feeling that you were going to shut it down?
Yeah, it's a good feeling. It's something that, you know, you have to just ride it as long as you can, whether you be a relief pitcher, a starting pitcher, or an everyday player. You're going to hit streaks and slumps during the course of your season, during the course of your career, and you just want to ride it as long as you possibly can. And as a player, I felt like doing the things that I could do on a daily basis to put myself in the best position to be successful day in, day out, that was the way I took the approach to my game. And I think teams really the same thing. And that's one thing that, when you're winning, a bunch of games, particularly if you've won, say, 24 out of 29 ball games or 24 out of 30 ball games like the Royals did there for a stretch in baseball, that's historic level of play. You're not going to do that for long. But you just want to ride it as long as you can. And fortunately, the Royals rode it for almost a month, and they were able to get themselves back not only into the contention, but ahead of, everyone else in their division. So you just want to ride it out as long as you can, whether it be individually or as a team.
Just was announced that Yordano Ventura is going to skip his next start because of a back strain. What have you seen in his game lately as an analyst and as a former player that might say that, he's starting to feel these innings tack on?
Well, any young player, you're getting to this time of season where normally your season's accustomed to being over. Minor league seasons end about the end of August, first part of September. So you're pushing to new limits. And I felt like that was one thing early in the season, even though the organization didn't really want to admit the fact that there was probably going to have to be some adjustments with regards to some of the particularly younger players' innings and limitations. I think it's good that you recognize it and you understand the value or the importance. All those five guys in that rotation are going to provide going down the stretch, and you're not going to have a ton of off days. So you have to kind of work through the opportunities you have to save innings, to save pitches, and with looking at Yordano Ventura and then even Danny Duffy, another young pitcher, who have both seemingly gone through ups and downs during the course of this season as far as their efficiency is concerned. When it all gets back to square one, you want them to understand the value of innings and the value of having low pitch count innings, because the less stress that you have on a nightly basis, the better chance you're going to be as far as being strong late in the season when you really need to be able to go out there and be a guy you can count on. Now, him missing a start to me is not a bad thing, because if you look at what happened with him going back earlier in the season when he had a little scare with his elbow, he skipped that one start. He came back and he was just brilliant almost immediately after missing that start. So I think a little boost of energy and a little recuperation for the arm certainly can do everybody, particularly young players, a lot of good this time of year.
Going back to your playing days, I think that 94 team, you said it was built around pitching, that is obvious, but you guys had a very good defense with Wally Joyner, McFarland, Gagne and at shortstop, and Brian McCray in center field. How does this defense compare to those late 80s, early 90s squads, and how much do fans underplay what this defense does night in and night out?
Well, I think it's fairly comparable defensively, because you mentioned a lot of players who had really good seasons, really good careers, and I think when you play against a team, you see them maybe, three games here and, maybe three games later on in the year, you don't really truly appreciate how good players are from a defensive standpoint. And Wally Joyner and Greg Gagne, two guys you mentioned those were two guys that I played against when they were with the Angels and the Twins respectively. And when they came to the Royals, that's when you really started to understand how valuable they were with their defense, because they're making plays almost daily that they're routine, but they're not routine. They're plays that a lot of other shortstops or first basemen in baseball at the time weren't making on a routine basis. They would make them look spectacular, and these guys made them look fairly routine. And if you look at the Royals' defense, it's been oftentimes filled with highlight plays from Alex Gordon or whoever it might be, Alcides Escobar. But when you see them play on a daily basis, sometimes you almost get accustomed to seeing those type of plays. But I think for the fan that goes out and sees, say 5 to 20 ball games a season, they may not have the chance to see that as regularly. So they don't have a chance to really truly appreciate it, especially when you're comparing it to other shortstops, other first basemen, other players around the American League, because, again, you just don't get a chance to see it as frequently. But as a broadcaster, someone who sees virtually every game, that's when you really truly appreciate it. Or as a teammate, when you have guys like Gagne and Joyner on your team, that's when you really appreciate what they bring to the table from a defensive standpoint. I can tell you as a pitcher, makes your job a lot easier, makes your ability to attack the strike zone, to work on pitch efficiency, to allow the hitters to get themselves out occasionally, as opposed to you going out there and trying to miss bats and trying to get every hitter out with your best pitch. So that good defense really does a lot for the pitching staff, and I also think the pitching staff does a lot for the defense. If you look at good pitching staffs, you're generally going to have a good defense behind them because they're going to get a lot of swings where guys aren't squaring balls up, so they're not hitting balls, you know, on the screws all the time, and it allows those guys to do what they do best, and that's flash that leather.
One guy who's changed kind of the perspective of his career is Alex Gordon with that defense, and he mentioned last week that there was some talk that he might waive his option and stay with the club through 16, and I'm sure the Royals have internal talks of keeping him longer than that. What was it like for you as a player to know that you were going to be able to retire with the team that you got traded to and that you'd spent all those years with?
Well, as a player, you really try to deflect as much as the individual discussions, particularly related to contracts, as you can, especially during the season. It's something that it gets taken care of. It normally gets taken care of when there's some type of a deadline that's looming and you have to get something done. A lot of productive discussions really don't happen during this time of year, and they really shouldn't. The focus, particularly on the player side, should be on doing your job as a player, putting that uniform on every night, going out and playing as hard as you possibly can. At the end of the day, knowing that your performance is going to really dictate or potentially mandate on your contract and where you're going to be for how long and all those things. So, I really, fortunately, was able to stay away from that type of situation, that type of discussion. I always said that, if we want to work on a contract situation, we'll do it before the season starts. And then once the year starts, then we're going to focus on baseball from that point on. And by taking that approach, it allowed me to not worry about it. It allowed me to go out and do my job and work on being productive, work on being healthy, working on doing all of the things you need to do. Then really, truly, at the end of the day, as a player, you're truly going to maximize your earning potential because you're not going to be selling yourself short. Now, you do take that risk of potentially an injury, it's going to shorten a career, something of that nature, but at the end of the day, you really want to focus on what your job is, and that's, as a pitcher, for me, getting people out, and then, for a player, doing the best you can to help your team win.
Is that just a case where you told your agent, here, I'm shutting it down, I don't want any talk here, and then you have obviously have a good enough relationship with the agent that he understands that?
Well, sometimes the agent will talk to you a little bit about, hey, if you're interested, we can maybe open up, discussions. And if that were ever the case with me, I would let him know that, hey, if you want to have talks with him, I'm fine with it. I don't want to be involved in them. And I think another thing that's important for fans to understand is that, agents, they maybe let on that they kind of run the show as far as the negotiations are concerned. But really, at the end of the day, the player is the one who is going to dictate what happens. The player is the one that's going to decide if I'm comfortable with this opportunity, the amount of years, where it's going to be, whoever the team is. The players really make the ultimate decisions, and I think there's a lot of kind of maybe bad rap put on agents because they're out there doing the very best they can, and oftentimes they're the ones who are in the spotlight. They're the ones who have the comments in the newspaper, and as a result, they're the ones who become the bad guys. But the players really ultimately, at the end of the day, they're the ones who sign that agent's check, and he's got to do really what the player wants him to do.
Kind of to bring that up, Alex, his quote was pretty telling of that. He said Casey Close wasn't the boss of him. And so, So he led on to that. But you bring up fans, and as a former player, I'm sure you have a different relationship with the team and just with the city than most fans do. What was the Sungwoo experience for you? What was that like, and did that rekindle your fandom as a kid rooting? I think you were rooting, you're a big Reds fan, weren't you?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting, the fact that we learned a lot about him. We learned a lot about, a very unique individual that's, on the other side of the planet from us, who has the ability to follow Royals baseball, and he has for a number of years. And to be able to bring him into play, especially when the team was going so well, and to see him experience something that, many people would do it was a dream come true for a lot of people, regardless of where you're from. And he was able to get a lot of attention and provide a lot of, I think, really special and memorable occasions for a lot of people he had the ability to come in contact with. And he's a neat guy. He's a guy that truly gets it. He understands, the Royals is probably as well as about anyone that's been around. By not being around, by being, following it through the internet and following it through broadcasts and so on and so forth. But to learn more about his story, I thought was really special. And the fact that we got a lot of very, major national exposure from that, I thought that was really cool. And, I was happy to have a chance to meet him. And he came on the pregame show with Joel Goldberg and I, and had a chance to, give him a glove that I had signed. And it was just, it was really something I'll never forget. When I handed him that glove, he was in awe at the fact that I'd given him a gift. But I'd played over in Japan in an exhibition series in the early 90s, so I understood that, the Asian culture was something that where, there's gifting and there's some expectation for appreciation for when you do something for or with someone. And I, as a result, I felt like having a gift ready for him would be a really neat thing to do. And the response that I got from people who had a chance to watch that, they were really, I think, impressed and amazed at the fact that someone was so appreciative the way that he was when he received that glove, really, in totally a surprise on television.
Yeah, it was an amazing story. It's still actually going on if you follow it over in South Korea. He's been on their, I guess, their version of Baseball Tonight a couple times, and just the whirlwind and the winning and everything. It was just, it really showed Kansas City at its finest.
Yeah, and that's great when you can create some very unique stories just, through the sport of baseball, regardless of what the sport is. It's fans are fans, and to have the ability to reward them for, being such, avid and such loyal followers of teams, that's really kind of what makes it go around. So it's really good to see.
Well, one last question. What do you think? Are they going to get it done? They've got a couple series with Minnesota and Cleveland and then the Rangers, and then they got a little bit of a gamut with the Yankees and Tigers. Is this the year?
Well, I think it's going to be a dogfight. I think it's not going to be as easy as we would like for it to be, but I think based on the strength of their bullpen and the fact that, really Detroit doesn't have that same ability to match up for them in that bullpen, I think they get a great chance. I like their chances better than anyone else's right now. Obviously things can change pretty quickly in this sport, but as long as they're able to keep doing what they've done, and again, it's not been flashy, it's not been spectacular, it's just been solid, it's been consistent, and they get someone almost, on a nightly basis doing something good to help them win ball games. I think they get a real chance to maybe change that, that drought or, stop the drought of, postseason baseball here in Kansas City. And I sure hope it happens, and it'll be a lot of fun. But like I said, it's going to be a dogfight to the end because, there are some other teams in that mix that have been there before, and they understand maybe a little bit more from experience on what it takes. So it's a little bit more of a, a learning curve for the Royals, but certainly they have surrounded the team with a lot of players who understand what that's all about. So it should be a lot of fun.
Well, definitely be fun, a lot more fun than we've had in the previous 20-some years. But thanks for Jeff for coming on, and hopefully we can talk to you during the playoffs.
That sounds great. Look forward to it. Thank you.
That was Royals Hall of Famer Jeff Montgomery. Jeff is so knowledgeable about the team, and obviously he follows them every day, and he gets to see them. And he's talking about the defensive comparisons. And it was such a different game back in 89, Dave, but you're a historian of the Royals, obviously. You followed them for so long. And that 89 team is probably, what, the second-best team since 85? I mean, there's pretty much 89, 94, and then maybe, what, this squad?
I would say they're the best team since 85, not including 85.
Yeah, not including 85.
I mean, this team's a good team, I think, but they're not the 89 team. The 94 team was pretty lucky, truthfully. They had that 14-game winning streak where it was just insane. And I think if you could extrapolate the rest of the season, if you play that season out, something tells me they'd finish around 84 and 78. They were decent, but not that good.
They were a decent team, but they were probably the third best team in that division. I mean, solidly. I mean, Cleveland Indians were coming. That was their first big team. And the White
and
Sox
the White Sox were finishing up their little reign.
Yeah, so, I mean, legitimately, they were built a lot like this team in that pitching, defense. Both those teams were. 89 was pitching and defense, and probably a little bit less defense than the 94 and this squad have in 89, but a lot more thump, I think, in the lineup in that 89 squad.
Yeah, the 94 team had had one thing going for them, and they had a legitimate middle-of-the-order guy in Hamlin that, boy, the Royals could really use Bob Hamlin, 94 Bob Hamlin right now.
How about 89 Bo Jackson and Danny Tartable?
That would work, too. At this point, I might consider bringing Danny Tartable out of retirement.
Yeah, I mean, the 89 squad, like, night in and night out, their statistics don't leap off the page, like, in a lineup. But putting a lineup together of Kurt Stillwell, who's a capable shortstop hitter, George Brett, Kevin Seitzer, Bo Jackson, Willie Wilson, Danny Tartable. I mean, Jim Eisenreich was a pretty solid outfielder at that time. I mean, they had solid top to bottom hitting wise. Really, the weakness of that team was getting to Jeff Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
It was Steve Farr kind of held things together, but it was the getting to Montgomery. But the 89 team, they didn't have that.
The problem is they needed some help in the rotation, so they had to pull.
They pulled in
Gordon
Tom
and Aquino out of the bullpen, and they were both solid in the rotation. Gordon could have won Rookie of the Year in another year. Won 17 games, I think, something like that. 3.65 ERA, somewhere in there, and he was good. Obviously, it turned out his best spot was the bullpen, as we found out as his career went on.
They didn't have that
bullpen.
They didn't have those extra starters. I mean, I think back then they ran mostly with a 4-man rotation. And it was Saberhagen, Gubazov, and that was pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
And how we get the ball to Gordon, Aquino, and the Royals kind of missed out on Louis Aquino, I think, a little bit. He was better than what they saw. They kept him more of a rotation, middle of rotation guy, and he lasted in the league quite a while. And probably on those teams, he could have been that fourth starter for longer than they let him do it.
Yeah, probably so. I don't remember the 89 team personally, but I've looked it up. I've watched. Watch videos of them that you find on the internet and read the stats and you talk to my parents and they know all about it. And yeah, I think there were some missed opportunities. That A's team in 89 was really good. Whether or not they were, enhanced by prescriptions. We'll discuss that another time, but you look at that team offensively and it's kind of interesting because George Brett was kind of the Gordon at that time. I mean, the Alex Gordon is the next George Brett comparison. Maybe they were just talking about late career George Brett. you're right. Bo Jackson was the thumper, and the Royals don't really have that guy. But Tartable, I don't know. Is that – who would that be this year? Billy Butler? he's better than Butler's been. I don't know.
Yeah, it's –
The problem is the Royals had three guys who were really, really solid, who were good, and then a couple others who were solid. And this Royals team doesn't have that.
Yeah, you're on the back half of Frank White, George Brett, and Willie Wilson's careers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got some up and comers, Bo Jackson, Danny Tartable, and
yeah, McFarlane on that team.
Yep, McFarlane was on that team.
I remember
team.
Gary Thurman was a fairly decent prospect at the time.
Yeah, and Bill Pakoda was on that squad pitching in a little bit. Just top to bottom, that's probably a better squad as far as in the lineup. But defensively, I think the Royals' defense now is much better.
If you could find a way, and I know that we're at least 6 months from this, but if you could find a way to send Kelvin Herrera, Wade Davis, and Greg Holland to 1989, I think that Royals team wins the division.
Probably. Send Duffy along with them.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, we're probably six, 7 months away from that. But
It's just too bad. They were probably this. They were probably right there for the second or third best team in the majors that year. I mean, they finished like seven games back. I think the Cubs might have won 93. I know they had the second best record in the AL, and the Cubs or Giants, one of them had 92, and the other one had 93 wins. And the Giants would go on, and they'd get swept in the World Series. But the Royals were probably the second or third best team in the majors, and they just fell victim to, you know, a chemically enhanced Oakland team that that ended up winning the World Series.
Yeah, that the 89 season, I think, was one of those years that Major League Baseball looked at and were like, first of all, we gotta change the way that change the division alignment, and then we gotta add a wild card because by record, the best team in baseball, and then the tie for the third best team in baseball and the fifth best team in baseball were all in the AL West. And, you know, the Angels won 91 games in 89, 90 or 91.
91, yeah.
91. And they really should have been they have a legitimate beef too. They feel like they should have been in the playoffs. And it's interesting looking back 25 years and two teams made the playoffs. That was it. It was in each league, obviously. It's just a different look at things. And, you know, right now we're talking, well, the Royals, they win 91 games. I think there's a decent shot they could, even if they don't win the division, they could probably take the second wild card. And second wild card? No way. That's not happening. and if the divisions were aligned the way they are, or the divisions were aligned today the way they were back then, 25 years ago, you've got another situation where the Royals are on the heels of the A's, and the Angels are right in there too. So it's interesting how much baseball has changed just based on the way that they line up the divisions.
Yep, it's totally different. And kind of moving past that, and we talked about enhancing that 89 roster with some of the team members of this class. But if we can enhance this year's roster with the players available to them, who obviously Liam Hendricks is coming up for the start tomorrow when you'll be listening to this. He might have already started. And then the other story is now that Terrence Gore is going to be possibly pitching in on the 40. What do you think of that?
I like it. I mean, we talked about this a few weeks ago. I mentioned it on Twitter. Then you and I think, talked about it on the podcast. I think we talked about it on Twitter, too, back and forth. And I think it's a really good way of utilizing your assets in the organization because in September, you have this unique opportunity that you're able to put more than 25 men on your roster. And we could have an argument all day about whether or not we agree with it. I think it's a little bit silly, personally, that division races are decided with a different set of rules, but that's for another day too. And because of that, the Royals are able to add some, as I called it in an article a couple weeks ago, some specialists to their roster. They can bring Terrence Gore up and have him never step foot in the batter's box. You know, the Royals used Jerod Dyson in the last few years as a pinch runner extraordinaire, and they still can, but a couple things. One, they have more than one plotter in the lineup. Josh Willingham is not fast. Billy Butler is, I know this will surprise you guys, but Billy Butler is not fast. Salvador Perez, also not fast. I know that maybe I should have highlighted that with breaking news because I don't want to shock anybody, but they could use some pinch runners in the right situation, and Terrence Gore can provide that. And let's be real, Jerod Dyson starts a lot now. Jerod Dyson isn't available off the bench, and it's nice to be able to say, all right, well, we started Dyson, so we have to pinch run Christian Colon. No, you don't have to. Now you got Terrence Gore, who many believe, and I might be in there. It's hard. I'd have to see them race, but many believe Gore is faster than Dyson.
I've never seen him race, but from all reports that I've heard from talking to coaches and scouts, that Terrence Gore is faster than Dyson and is easily the fastest guy in the organization and might be the fastest guy in all of baseball. That's what kind of speed this guy brings to the table. I mean, but I think I wrote that he ripped off between JUCO and the pros, he ripped off like 46 consecutive bags before he got caught. And then he's running at a 90% clip right now, which is pretty crazy. Here's a guy playing high A ball that's ripping off bags at AAA, and you might not think that's a big jump, but it is. It's a huge jump for guys. And it's a big jump when everybody knows he's stealing. I mean, this isn't a case of, here, you're going to sneak, he got a single, he's coming on. No, this guy's pinch running pretty much in every situation. He got the start last night, but for the most part, all of his attempts are as a pinch runner. And
well, you look at a guy like Billy Hamilton as a minor league base stealer that got a ton of accolades, and rightfully so. I mean, he stole, how many did he steal a couple years ago? Was it 100?
Yeah, it was,
it was 155 in 2012. That's insane. But you know what? He got caught 37 times. I mean, well, first of all, that's just insane that he ran 192 times. But everybody knew he was going, and he got caught, and it happened. Like, and it was, you put it aside because you think, okay, well, we knew he was going, so it's okay that he got caught occasionally, and he was just working on his base stealing. Everybody knows Terrence Gore is going, and he doesn't get caught.
No, I mean, it's crazy. The guy's got, he's got world-class speed as far as, and world-class speed top to bottom, and he can help the squad out. He can't really do much. I mean, he can't. He's not a great fielder. You're not. He's got a pop gun for an arm. Mm-hmm. He's not going to hit. But hey, running for the guys that you mentioned, running for anybody for that matter. I mean, he's an upgrade in speed. You're not going to have him run for Dyson. But if Aoki's on first and you're down a run, why not?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to look at the opportunity cost there, and I think, what would be your cutoff? Oh, he might be the fastest guy you'd pinch run for. I mean, you put Kane on first base, you're not going to put Terrence Gore to run for him.
No, you're not going to put it.
Same with Escobar.
Yeah,
probably. Yeah, I mean, there's guy you wouldn't.
You're not going to run for Gordon. I mean, you're not going to. But hey, in the right situation, down a run, we need a run. This is the make it or break it time of year. This is the time to run the kid. And
sure.
It's a good idea to have him. And there's other guys that need to come up. You know, Casey Coleman needs to come up. Hendricks is going to be up. I think Hendricks will probably stick around. Francisco Pena, with Sal Perez's knee situation, he's got to come up.
Well, my guess with Hendrick, real quick on him, I got a feeling that the guy to go is Bruce Chen. And so I think Hendricks is going to stay up and probably fill that long man role out of the bullpen here. Over the last month of the year, and the Royals might see if that's his role for next year too. You're right, Coleman. Sorry to butt in, but just kind of want to get to the bullpen before we get too deep into it. What I like about calling up AAA relievers is the Royals need bodies out there, because outside of Herrera, Davis, and Holland, the other guys are a little bit questionable. Aaron Crow at times looks as good as any of the big three, but at other times he looks like he should be pitching in Double A. Francis Lee Bueno, God, I don't know what to make of him. I think his clock might have struck midnight on him, the way he's been pitching lately. And he's always been one of those guys you look at and you go, I don't understand how he's succeeding, but he's succeeding, so what are you gonna do?
Well, I think Ned's overexposed him. I mean,
right.
It's Ned just will not match up. He just won't.
But is it really Yost's fault? I mean, who else is he supposed to?
He's got
to
know. He's got to. The other day, he brings in, I don't remember what game it was, is last week, but you got righty, lefty, righty coming up. And he starts the inning with Bueno. Why not start the inning with Crow there?
You're right. Or Fraser. What is the aversion to Jason Fraser?
Yeah, one bad outing, and now he's not usable. I mean, that's just how Yost is. He won't go to matchups. You've got Jason Fraser down there. You got Aaron Crow. You've got he hasn't pitched Chen in a month or whatever, or he's pinched him one time all month. That's not using the roster to its max. Get him
Chen,
out of there.
Chen is in the Mendoza role right now.
Get him
Which
out
is
of
why
there,
I think that Hendricks replaces him.
I just don't understand that. Get him out of there. You need bodies. You need bodies that can get outs. The close game that you can go out and win is more important than sticking Aaron Crow out there for two innings in a 10-run affair.
Oh, I'm with you.
It's it's mismanagement of the roster. It's not understanding where this team's at currently. And, you know, now you run into a situation where Sal Perez needs time off. So Francisco Pena, and you using Eric Kratz, that should be important. And pinch hitting those guys, having three catchers up, but knowing Yost, he's not gonna do that. He's not gonna pinch hit Carlos Peguero when he should. He's not gonna pinch hit Pena or Kratz when he needs some power coming off the bench. He won't do that.
Well,
he'll
let me
ride
ask you
the starters.
Who are you pinch hitting for? If you look up and down the lineup, you're probably, if Aoki's in there, you're pinch hitting for him.
I'm pinch hitting for Escobar.
I wasn't asking you. I wasn't saying there's nobody to pinch hit for. I'm asking you who. I think it's Aoki, Infante, but they'll never pinch hit for him. Potentially Hosmer if he's playing and Willingham's on the bench and a lefty comes in, and Escobar and I maybe Moustakas, I guess.
I'm pinch hitting for. I mean, Jerrod Dyson should be exempt. The guy can't hit lefties at all. So
no, that's true. That's a good point.
So you pinch hit for him.
I guess maybe Dyson Aoki.
Dyson Aoki, Escobar. Obviously, Ibanez you're pinch hitting for if he's getting playing time. Moustakas, if the right lefty comes in. And that's probably it. I mean, those are your guys.
I made that sound like I was saying there's nobody to pinch hit for.
Hitting, they would never do it. But the way Sal's hitting, you should pinch it for him.
Well, Perez and Infante shouldn't be exempt either.
Yeah. No, they shouldn't be. I mean.
But they will be.
Yeah. It's.
I would like to see. I haven't looked too closely. I probably should have before we started talking about this. But I would like to see another middle infielder type in the majors. I'm not sure if there's even anybody to.
Now the only guy they have that would be Pedro Siriaco. I mean, that's really
I don't see that happening. It's just you struggle because I guess Giovitella could get the call and not get DFA, but I think he's going to get DFA'd for one of the guys who's coming up.
Yeah, I think he's DFA'd. I think other than the guys we've mentioned, there's not. And I don't think any of these guys are big impact. I think Terrence Gore's as big an impact as you're going to find.
Yeah, I agree.
His wheels might be able to win them a game down the stretch. But other than that, there's no impact. Unless Brandon Finnegan comes up or Kyle Zimmer writes the ship real fast and comes up. I don't see an arm impact. Hendricks is nice to have as a long man, but that's not an impact.
Casey, I think he's a better spot starter than Aaron Brooks.
Yeah, he is. He is there. If the Ventura thing lasts longer than it is, then yeah.
Yeah. What about, I'm not saying I advocate this, just throwing a name out there. What about Paul Janisch as a guy who could come up and play some middle infield? I know he's got to be put on the 40-man.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could do that. He's hitting a little bit down in Omaha, and he serves a purpose. Listen, if you're gonna pinch hit like we're talking about for players, then you got to have quality middle infielders, and I think Janisch is a quality defensive middle infielder.
I think that for if they were to do what we're talking about, I think Janisch serves a bigger purpose than Giovitella.
I do too. Janisch is probably a better shortstop than Christian Colon.
Right. Exactly. That I think. If you need to at this point, the Royals wouldn't do it. So we say that a lot, don't we? At this point, if Escobar went down with an injury, I would be more comfortable with Janisch playing there for 2 weeks than Colon.
Oh, I would too. It's
defensively.
You're talking about a team that's built around defense, and
yeah.
Paul Janisch probably plays a better shortstop than Christian Colon does,
which is interesting, but. I mean, I don't know. It could be interesting to see if the Royals are going to kind of – they have 15 spots to fill at the big league level. They can use 40 men, obviously. there's some restrictions there because they have to be on the 40-man roster, and so there's issues. Terrence Gore is not on the 40-man roster, and truthfully, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes on the 40-man and then gets DFA'd after the season. He'll serve his purpose for a month, and then they're going to need that roster spot for a free agent or a trade.
No, I would be shocked if he didn't.
Nothing shocks me with the Royals.
No, I don't think they have any. Then you can go out and find another fast guy only guy.
Well, I think the fact that they put him in Omaha to pinch run basically tells you everything that you know about him for in all reality. Finnegan's going to need a spot on the 40-man. Once he's on there, he's not going off, so don't worry about that. But you look around at these guys, and maybe they could go to an approach where they call up five or six relievers or five or six pitchers to pitch out of the bullpen. I don't want to call Finnegan a reliever at this point. Two or three guys who can hit the ball 500 feet, and then two or three guys who can go in for defense when those guys who hit the ball 500 feet pinch it for the players before. And that would be a really good use of the roster. There's obviously some manipulations that would be necessary because most of these guys are not on the 40-man. Carlos Peguero, not on the 40-man. Terrence Gore, not on the 40-man. Paul Yanish, not on the 40-man. And that's where you wonder if maybe Lane Adams gets a surprise call-up. I don't think so, but maybe. Because he is on the 40-man. He doesn't require a move.
I'd call him up because he can play, he can actually play defense
mm-hmm.
and run.
Well, the thing about Adams, too, is he's old enough that you don't worry so much about the bright lights bothering him, A.
No, he's played spring ball.
He's a mature guy, too, on top of everything else. But he's also got enough talent, and maybe you catch lightning in a bottle, and maybe he goes on one of those first-month rookie tiers. Maybe he does what Kevin Kiermaier did in Tampa and just surprises the hell out of everybody, and you only need to happen for a month. And I don't know. Crazier things have happened than a guy like Lane Adams coming up and holding down the seventh spot in the lineup.
Well, like tonight, okay? Let's say that tonight's a perfect example that you're running Jerod Dyson and Mike Moustakas out there, and you need a righty bat, and Willingham's already in the lineup. Who are you going to?
Yeah, and there's no Eric Kratz, but you're not going to pinch hit for him.
Yeah,
or with
not
him,
with
you,
Sal.
Your backup.
Yeah, not with Sal. I mean, obviously, you're going to have Pena and Kratz on the roster, but you're probably not going to anyway if you're Ned Yost because you believe Sal is so valuable. Mm-hmm. That he can't ever come out of lineup. And so, yeah, I mean, where are you going? Well, I think you got to go with Lane Adams might be that guy that you go with. I mean, he might be a little overwhelmed at the spot, but let's face it, Brian Dunsing's coming in here in a few outs, and you're down a run, and do you really want Mike Moustakas and Jerod Dyson facing him?
Right. I mean, who else is there? There's nobody. Because the big bats in Omaha, I guess Matt Fields is a guy who you could bring up, and I had talked about him. He's
but
you
he's
want
not
a guy,
on the roster, so that's the problem.
Well, that's
there.
Another one. You're right. That's all these guys who are specialists. Right, I put air quotes around that for those who aren't looking through my window while we record. All these guys are specialists for a reason. It's because they don't have really strong skills elsewhere, and because they don't have really strong skills elsewhere, they don't belong on the 40-man. And so, yeah, you could potentially look at a Matt Fields if you want to get some right-handed power. Brett Eibner's got power, but he's not playing. I mean, I'm just looking up and down the roster. There's not much right-handed power on this AAA team.
No, it's Matt Fields, and that's about it. I mean,
and the other name, and I think the Royals are done with him, is Maxwell. Well, Pena and Maxwell, too.
Yeah, well, Maxwell just he went to the DL tonight. So.
Oh, I did not see that.
Yeah, so his deal is probably done. He's got some kind of injury. At least that was the email that I got. And so it's, you know.
I had not seen that yet.
Yeah, what is it? He's got right hip soreness, retro to August 24th. So, and that's to free up a spot, I'm sure. But,
mm-hmm.
but
well,
still.
Then there's, you know, Whit Merrifield, but he's not a guy.
He's not a power guy. And
now,
he's the same
you could
of
maybe
getting on the 40.
No. You could maybe argue that in a different season, that Whit Merrifield's season is the exact type that the Royals should reward. but this is not that season. They need players who can contribute. And the problem with Whit Merrifield is he's not going to start. And Whit Merrifield's value is as a starter because he's kind of like, I'm trying to think of a, he's like if Alex Gordon lost 20 points on every skill. There's
not
nothing.
There's
well, maybe 50 yeah. points. I don't know. But you get my point is that he just, he's one of those guys. He does a little bit of everything, nothing great. And in terms of with Merrifield, nothing all that well, truthfully.
I think you'd be hoping you caught Mark Lemke with Whit Merrifield.
Right. And that's fine. But yeah, I do think the Royals in their past have done a poor job of rewarding minor league players for having good seasons. And if they were 58 and 72 instead of 72 and 58, and hopefully it doesn't change in a few minutes to 59, but if their record was reversed, Whit Merrifield should absolutely get called up to be rewarded for his season. But sorry, Whit, this team needs help more than they need to make players look good.
Oh, I agree. It's not about rewarding players. It's about winning.
Definitely. I think, and that's a good point for us to bid you adieu for the week. Thanks for listening to us jabber about roster stuff, and hopefully this offense picks up before we talk to you guys again.
Talk to you guys next week.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.